Hello, everyone, and welcome to our The Week That Was in Europe podcast. My name is Dirk Schumacher. I'm the head of European macro research at Natixis. And with me, as usual, is Klaus Adam, professor of economics at the University of Mannheim.
Yes, hello also from my side. So today we want to talk about the challenging new economic environment in which the German economy finds itself. Germany has to wean itself off from Russian gas at the same time as economic and political relations with China are getting more challenging. We shall thus discuss what this entails potentially for the German economy going forward. But before jumping into our main topic, let's have a quick look at the latest macro data coming out, Dirk.
Yeah, there were two data points this week which were interesting. First, industrial production that was down 2.3% on the month in July. This decline, however, is coming after two relatively strong months, and a three-month moving average is still positive at 1.1%. But the decline, we think, also reflects some genuine weakness, and that things are certainly going to look better in the next couple of months in the industrial sector. And the other interesting data point were data on labor cost, the so-called labor cost index for the second quarter was released, showing 4% after 4.0. At the same time, negotiated wages, another measure, went down to 2.4 after 3.0. Looking at, if you will, the historical range of these series, then we are at the upper end when it comes to labor costs, but still within the historical range. So far, and this is just second quarter, there is no indication that wage growth in the euro area was really exploding or breaking out of historical range. But let's move on now to our main topic. Klaus?
Yeah, so the backdrop of the challenges that the German economy faces is a global economic slowdown, and that is triggered by three factors. A dramatic surge in energy prices. Secondly, continuing supply chain problems coming out of China and other parts of the world. And thirdly, tighter monetary policy going forward. While these headwinds are affecting most countries, the German economy seems to be especially hard hit. In fact, we can see that already in the hot numbers. German GDP just recovered to its pre-pandemic level in the second quarter of 22. And in contrast, euro area GDP is already 2 percentage points above that level. Importantly, however, the challenges for the German economy will not only be of such a cyclical nature, becoming energy independent from Russia, deglobalization and disentangling potentially from China are likely to remain headwinds for years to come. And this has the potential for economic underperformance of the German economy vis-a-vis its European peers. So in some sense, Germany might even have to reinvent itself.
Indeed. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time, but challenging nonetheless. So let's start. How energy intensive is the German economy? Taking at face value, Germany would seem, all else equal, more vulnerable to rising energy costs than some of its European peers. And that has to do, obviously, with a big share of German manufacturing, which is currently around 24% compared with 17% for the euro area as a whole. France is roughly about 10% here. And also interesting in absolute terms, not just the share of GDP, that gross value added in the German manufacturer is roughly as big as that for France, Italy, and Spain combined. In 2021, for example, the share of the German manufacturing sector at total euro area manufacturing output was about 38%, and that compares to 35% if you put France, Italy, and Spain together. So yes, there's no doubt that German industry is big in absolute and relative terms.
So given this high level of manufacturing, a structurally higher level of energy costs should be more painful for Germany than for these other countries. And indeed, the German economy does consume more energy than any other. In 2019, so the last year before the pandemic, Germany consumed 12.6 exajoules of energy, which is around 35% more than France, which consumed 9.4 exajoules.
Yeah, but if we put these figures in relation to GDP, it shows that the German economy uses actually a bit less energy per unit GDP than the French economy. Now, that includes all sectors when it comes to energy consumption, in particular households, and it therefore may give a wrong impression in terms of the energy intensity of the corporate sector. Of course, how households heat and how good houses are insulated against the cold and all that matters. And it seems to be that maybe the German households consume per capita less energy. But looking just as the manufacturing sector, it shows also that Germany is only slightly more energy intensive, measured as electricity and gas per unit of value added, that is. Slightly more energy intensive here than France, and less energy intensive than Italy.
So yeah, in terms of energy intensity in manufacturing, Germany somewhat lies between France and Italy, but it still has this very large manufacturing sector, one bigger than France and Italy and Spain combined. And it has the additional challenge to become independent from Russian gas and also perhaps soon oil. And it is often said that the relative success of German manufacturing was based partly on access to cheap Russian gas. Now, with Russian energy imports, in particular gas imports, being largely a thing of the past, now what will the consequences be? There are going to be several dimensions to answer these questions, and unfortunately, none of them are going to be particularly easy to answer, but here are two. So how difficult will it be in principle to substitute away from the Russian energy imports with other sources? And we should discuss this in a second. And then secondly, how will the energy prices in Germany develop relative to other countries in Europe or other parts of the world? And this question is relevant to then assess the risk that companies or industries even may relocate and shift their production abroad.
Yeah, with respect to the first question, we can see that the substitution away from Russia is making actually quite fast progress. While Russian gas imports accounted for more than 50% before the war, this number was reduced to below 30% before Russia started to reduce the flow from its side during the summer. Higher imports from Norway and LNG, so liquefied natural gas, from all parts of the world have partially compensated for the decline in Russian gas imports. And the fact that the gas reserves are still getting fuller, actually ahead of plan, despite now an almost complete shutdown of Russian gas flows to Europe, shows that the substitution is still progressing.
Yeah, and the decline in the demand for gas has significantly contributed to the progress in filling up the deposits and in substituting away from the Russian gas. So for the first half of this year, overall gas demand in Germany was down around 15% compared to the same period last year. Some of this savings obviously may reflect the warm weather, but if you look at industrial gas demand, say for the month of August, it was down even more. It was down 22% compared to 1 year ago. Clearly, this not only reflects efficiency gains and the gains from substituting gas by other sources, but also a decline in production of some chemicals, for instance, which are very gas intensive, is now close to the lows seen during the first COVID lockdown in Germany.
A test for Germany's ability to adjust to the new environment will be the planned construction of two new LNG terminals by the end of the year in northern Germany. Germany so far does not have any terminals through which it could import LNG directly. And the aim of these new terminals, or the goal, will to provide 8% of gas consumption in Germany. The construction time, if all goes according to plan, would be only 7 months. Everybody who's familiar how long it usually takes if some public infrastructure is built will say that this is a record. So in sum, an outright rationing of gas would now seem rather unlikely during the winter, at least given that reserves are quickly filled up. But how cold the winter will be and whether private households will be willing to economize on gas consumption will be a decisive factor in that respect.
Okay, so the substitution is in full swing, and if things go well, there's going to be no rationing. But now, what does this mean for potential energy prices going forward and the risks of relocating a lot of economic activity to other countries? So there can be a little doubt that Germany will face permanently higher energy prices and that this will weigh on growth. But higher energy costs are hitting many countries and not a Germany-specific problem. And this is particularly true for markets that are global in nature, such as the oil market or the LNG market. That said, not all energy commodities are easily tradable, and there can be significant price differences across countries and continents.
In the European perspective, it's important that the common market for electricity and gas implies that the differences in energy costs are limited in Europe. There may be, however, changes to the market setup going forward, and that would lead may lead to bigger price differences. For example, the so-called Iberian exception granted to Spain and Portugal, which allows them to deviate from the merit order principle in setting electricity prices, could be a harbinger for bigger changes, and that could also lead to lasting price differences.
So all this means that by and large, the other economies in Europe will see the same prices as Germany, but the real competitive threat is perhaps coming from the United States. Unlike Europe, the US is self-sufficient when it comes to energy. And this is also true for gas and can explain a significant price difference for natural gas. So while gas prices in the US have increased by roughly 100% from the start of the year until the end of August, they rose by 250% in Europe. And already prior to that, there were significant differences in the prices of gas across the two continents. Now, in absolute terms, the price for natural gas in the United States, labeled Henry Hub, is around $8 per million British thermal units. And the same price, the same unit, costs $60 in Europe. And it's widely expected that these price differences will remain in place for some time to come. So it's not surprising that there is already anecdotal evidence that some chemical companies are shifting production to the United States.
Yeah, so that's the, if you will, the energy part of the story. And let's move on to deglobalization and disentangling from China economically. I mean, Germany has clearly benefited strongly from globalization over the last three decades. The share of German exports at GDP, for example, been steadily rising from around 20% in the early 90s to close to 50% today. The import share has increased from around 20% to 40%. And therefore, it seems obvious that deglobalization and disentanglement from China, which obviously would weigh on the export sector, would also affect Germany disproportionately in terms of its growth prospect.
Yeah, deglobalization is, of course, a hot topic nowadays. But can we see any of that in the data already? Do we see it somewhere in hard data? And here it may come as a surprise that global trade continues to develop, at least so far, along a broadly unchanged trend. So if we compare the value of global trade over the last 6 months with the last 6 months before the pandemic, we see an increase of around 6%. It is true that trend growth in global trade has slowed down since the financial crisis in 2007-08. But there is no evidence of any further weakening of this trend since then. And I think this is perhaps overall good news. But it doesn't, of course, mean that such a deglobalization couldn't happen going forward.
And moreover, what we see is that global trade as a share of world output is on a gradual downward trend since the financial crisis, after it had been rising sharply since the 1980s onwards. Looking at German exports, we can see that nominal exports have been literally exploding since the pandemic, as exporters have raised prices sharply. However, in real terms, that means if we adjust for price increases, exports have been stagnating since the pandemic.
Yeah, this does not mean that German exporters are hit by deglobalization. After all, this, you know, there's a backdrop of supply chains in holding back manufacturing production for some time. If we look at export orders, they have been showing very strong readings, and it's you know, there's no sign of deglobalization on that front. Looking at German exports, more specifically to China, there's also no sign of a slowdown. Exports to China remain broadly on the same trend line for around 10 years now.
Yeah, funnily, or somewhat ironically, if there's one country where German exports have steadily declined to, it's the UK, so very close to home. Exports are now roughly at the same level, exports Germany to the UK, than they were in 2012. And the reason behind is obviously Brexit. In that sense, there are cases where deintegration of or scrapping of trade agreements and Brexit is a proof that all that matters, and that if you were to increase trade hurdles, if governments were to do that, it's obvious that would hit trade, and again, that Germany would be hit probably disproportionately.
Yeah, so one simple way to look at the importance of trade for German growth is to look at the contribution of net trade, that is exports minus imports, to growth. There's a lot of volatility in that contribution over time, but over the past 30 years, that contribution has been positive. The average annualized quarterly growth was 1.4% for the whole economy, and net trade contributed about 0.2 percentage points to that, so 1/7. However, over the last 10 years, that contribution has actually moved into negative territory. It was minus 0.1 percentage points. So to be sure, this does not mean that exports have not contributed positively to growth in the past 10 years, but what it shows is that imports have more than offset this growth contribution, and that may be to other reasons like demand factors in the final consumption sector.
Indeed. I mean, there are different underlying factors, stories at work here, and one should not jump to the conclusion what to make out of this empirical fact that net trade on average contributed negatively to growth. But what we can say nevertheless, we would like to stress, is that German growth is far away from just being a story of foreign trade. So if you were to believe firmly that deglobalization is a fact or will be a fact going forward, that this would imply doom for Germany. I mean, there are several growth engines, and this is what these data are showing in the end.
Yeah, so what we can learn from the data is that deglobalization is not a given. It's not strongly there in the data. Something seems to have happened around the great financial crisis 2007-08, but since then, additional signs of slowdowns are not there, with the possible exception of the UK. Of course, things may change, and it's very much conceivable that with China in particular, trade will become less dynamic going forward. And the German Economics Ministry, for example, has released a paper that argued in favor of less government support for companies trading or investing in China.
It's important to keep in mind that the uncertainty with respect to how German trade and the export sector will develop is higher than it may seem, that any story that is German growth just a function of export to China is certainly far too simplistic.
Yeah, so this is all true, but you know, could we still get a handle on how deglobalization going forward might affect the German economy? And this is likely going to depend on the form of deglobalization, the form it would take, and how quickly it would happen. Any rapid form of deglobalization in the form of a Brexit-style scenario would clearly have significant adverse growth consequences. In the end, German exports to the UK declined by around 20% over the last 5 years as a result of Brexit.
Yeah, using this as a baseline for all German exports, so decline of 20% of all German exports, this would mechanically translate into a negative growth contribution of exports of minus 10%, given the weight of exports in German GDP. But of course, imports would decline also strongly, as less intermediate inputs would be needed. A big part of German imports are intermediate goods that are processed further and then exported. And given the weight of imports at GDP, and now just for simplicity reasons, assuming that they were all intermediate inputs, this would imply a total negative contribution of -2% of GDP. Spread over a couple of years, this would seem face value digestible.
Right, but this is of course a lower bound because some of the imports are of course used for domestic consumption. So this back of the envelope calculation also misses a number of other important second round effects and makes the unrealistic assumption that this, as I just said, all these imports are intermediate inputs. So export weakness could of course spill over to less investment spending, less employment in the export sector, and then this might partially be compensated by the need to replace Chinese imports via domestic production. And this could at least generate some growth in other areas. But there would be a lot of frictions along the way, and it would seem safe to assume that this would overall generate a negative contribution as a result of these frictions. But all of this shows, of course, also that it will likely depend on the time horizon over which this will happen. If it happens gradually, the adjustment processes can work more smoothly and the frictions will likely be lower. Of course, there's also the view that German productivity growth was partially fueled by trade integration and the globalization process. And as if that is true, then any reversal in globalization and trade may also have adverse consequences in the long term on productivity growth. And that would certainly be felt strongly over time.
Yep. To sum up all we try to say today, it's easy to see how Germany will underperform the rest of Europe as the environment changes in a unfavorable way, given the way the German economy looks like at this point, with a big manufacturing sector where energy intensity is relatively high, and also obviously lots of exposure to foreign trade with other countries. But as usual, how that will play out will depend a lot on, well, how big the shock is going to be and over what time span all this will play out in the end. Where energy prices will settle eventually, how much progress renewable energy will make in contributing to energy, all that will be very important, and how gradual deglobalization will take place. As we try to say, a Brexit-style scenario obviously would be quite a big shock, but at least for the time being, there's no indication that this will happen overnight, the kind of deglobalization. In fact, in the data, as we said, it's hard to see. Anyway, thanks for your time, Klaus, and talk to you next week.